Hello and welcome back to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. My name's Ed Scott and this is the first of multiple episodes that we'll be dropping this week featuring some pre- and post-race conversations with many of the athletes at the Arc of Attrition, which took place this past weekend down in Cornwall. If you've not heard of the Arc of Attrition, I don't know where you've been. It's a long-standing fixture in the ultra running calendar here in the UK, 100 miles and 50 miles round the southwestern tip of Cornwall, the end of England. It's been going for about 10 years now, but last year it was acquired by UTMB and we saw a roster of competitive athletes head down for that reason, including Tom Evans, Hugh Chatford and Keith Wigley, all three of whom I spoke to on the podcast last year. Make sure you go and check those out. This year, the race again attracted a real depth of competition in the men's and the women's race. Athletes flew in from North America, from Europe, and we spoke to some of them on this podcast in episodes that will drop in the coming days. Charlotte Fisher, though, is someone I've wanted to have on the podcast for a long time. She's got some amazing performances in her CV with second place at Lakeland. She's taken the win at North Downs Way in the past, and she's relatively new to the sport. She only started running in the past couple of years, but she's quickly established herself as one of the most dominant female ultra runners in the UK, and this performance this past weekend at the Arc really cemented that. Charlotte came second in 23:49 and change. She earned herself a black buckle, one of six women ever to do that, and as you'll hear towards the end of this podcast, one of only two women to have done that in a bad weather year. And my goodness me, was this a bad weather year. Storm Ingrid, as it was named, swept in, and for the 100 mile runners it was a very rough night. I know this because I was crewing my friend Alex. Massive shout out to him to get in under 30 hours and take home that gold buckle. It was a difficult race, and I think that only makes Charlotte's performance all the more impressive. This episode consists of two conversations, one with Charlotte pre-race, which we live streamed on Thursday, and then a shorter conversation after the race just to catch up and reflect on how it went. If you want to watch some of the live stream, you can head to YouTube and do that. We'll be dropping each of the conversations we had as separate episodes throughout this week, but you can watch all of them now on YouTube as well. Just a quick thank you to all of the sponsors of the podcast. There will be some shout outs during the episode as well. Centurion Ultra Running Store, Janji, Petzl and Trailskin. When I say the podcast isn't possible without these sponsors, this is what I mean. We were able to go down to Cornwall because of the investment of these brands, provide some pre-race coverage, extend the offering of Feet First to some video content. And this was really a test for us. We've never done this before. And I think it's fair to say we're going to be doing it again. We've learned some lessons and we're looking forward to covering some of the other big races here in the UK throughout the year. But we can't do it without the support of sponsors. So make sure you show them some love. There'll be links in the show notes. If you need any new trail running gear, check out the sponsors of this show. There's discount codes as well. So thank you again to them and thank you for listening. All right, here we go. This is Charlotte Fisher. All right, we are live. Welcome, Charlotte Fisher. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. My first in-person podcast.
Yeah, my first live stream podcast. So we'll see how everything goes. Do let us know if you're in the chat. Just let us know it's working because we're not entirely sure. I always think it's good when someone's on the podcast for the first time to just get an introduction, get a sense of who they are, their running background. So in your own words, just mute that. We just got some feedback. You can just mute it on the studio, Em. Sorry, we got a bit of feedback there. Yeah, in your own words, what's your running background? Who are you? Introduce yourself to our audience, people who aren't familiar.
So my name's Charlotte Fisher. I grew up on the Isle of Wight and that's where I currently live. My running background isn't the traditional background. I started running in 2023 purely as something I signed up for charity.
Yeah.
So it was basically the hardest challenge I thought I could take on. It was a 106-kilometer ultra around the Isle of Wight to raise money for the hospice that had looked after my aunt. Bearing in mind, I wasn't a runner. I hadn't run a marathon. I hadn't run any form of event, not even a park run or anything like that. But there is an event on the Isle of Wight called Walk the Wight, which is a marathon essentially, but people don't run it, they walk it, and that does raise money for the hospice. She said, don't just do Walk the Wight because everyone does that, I want you to do something harder. Yeah, so for me, when I was like, okay, Walk the Wight's not extreme enough, it has to be something bigger. So that's where I saw the Isle of Wight Ultra Challenge, which is around the coast. It is a charity event and you can walk it, so it wasn't necessarily, to start with when I signed up, I was going to run it and, you know, get a great time. It wasn't like that. It was just more of a sign up, complete it.
Yeah.
I hired a coach because I was like, I've got a chance of finishing this thing, I think it's best to, you know, have a bit of information on, you know, taking on an ultra. At the time, I think I thought that this ultra was like the longest kind of event anyone ever does. I had nothing to do with running or the community or anything. So I signed up, I had 12 weeks of training for it, and it sort of in itself was transformative to my life. The benefits that the running gave me and the structure and the routine, I loved it. I'd never trail run before. So although I wasn't a runner before, I had done, you know, like 5 or 10K before around the town to lose weight. That was only ever like a weight loss kind of run that I'd done like sporadically throughout my life. Whereas when I was training for this event, I'd been set trail runs to do. And I was out seeing parts of the Isle of Wight. Obviously, I'm a dog walker on the island as well, so I do know certain places by foot, but it just opened up so much of the countryside to me, and I loved it. And yeah, within those 12 weeks, I really fell in love with running, trail running, and then ended up winning the event, which nobody saw coming. Like, literally, because I wasn't an athletic person, and I wasn't somebody, you know, that anyone thought could be capable of winning any sort of run, let alone like an ultra. So yeah, that was the start of it all in 2023.
That's 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
That's amazing. And it's interesting, it's an ultra challenge event, right?
Yeah, ultra challenge.
Because they're often peripheral to a lot of like mainstream ultra running, like they're sort of considered more hiker, walker friendly events, which they are. Yeah. They're really inclusive. But yeah, I think it's really interesting that you've gone from that kind of world straight into the slightly more, I guess, aggressive or slightly more technical trail running world.
My second event was Centurion, which I feel like is the step up then. Yeah. So I went to, after I finished the 106 kilometer, I was like, I'm no ultra runner until I've done 100 miles. So
high bar.
I signed up to the North Down Way after that, which my coach at the time, he was like, I think you should do the Autumn 100. It gives you a little bit more time, because obviously I was going from zero to 100 miles within 6 months.
Yeah.
Which is a little unhinged.
And North Downs is a tough 100 as well.
Yeah, and that's what obviously he said. But in my mind, I wanted the summer race. Right. I didn't want to do one in October, which is funny considering now I'm in Coolmore in January. Things change a lot, like in a short amount of time. But I didn't like the idea of the Autumn 100 because I was like, I don't want to be running like in the dark at that time of year. I want to do the North Down Way. It's always sunny, etc. But actually, the year I did the North Down Way was a named storm, and it was horrific from start to finish. Torrential rain, high winds. I didn't get any of the views. I may have been running around a track for the amount of, you know, stuff that I saw. And yeah, I like the step up with that because I was allowed a pacer, so it's not still quite as extreme as you know, racing like the UTMB events. There's quite a few aid stations, but it is that step up where there is cutoffs. Ultra Challenge, I always say, is a really good entry race for people because it takes that pressure off.
Yeah, you can walk it if you want.
You can walk it, and hence why it was a great event for me to do first, and then stepped up to Centurion, and then
I won that. Also, you were I did win that.
Which again, that was again, I didn't expect to win that.
But then it feels like last. So that was 2024.
Yeah,
it feels like last
2023.
Year. That was still 23.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow, what a year.
I know.
Because it does feel like you had this kind of breakthrough year. Was that 24 or 25 where you ran UTS and Lakeland? That was last year, wasn't it?
And Miorca.
And Miorca.
This year.
No, well, it's 26 so last now. Yeah, 25.
Yeah, 25.
That feels like quite a double UTS 100, which is a really tough 100, and Lakeland 100.
Yep.
So, and they're not that far apart. So talk me through that decision and that experience of racing those two back to back, basically. It's almost like the Western States Hard Rock of,
do you know
of
what?
The UK.
I had the year before done UTS.
That year
was a bit of a write-off for me. So I'd had that really great breakthrough year. Following year, I did UTS, and I was meant to be doing the UTMB Miorca, which got cancelled.
Right.
And at that point, I hadn't prioritised my work calendar with racing. So I house sit.
Yeah.
So my calendar gets booked up, and I have to be at people's houses certain times of the year.
And
so
this isn't like a psychic, like this is premium house sitting, right? From what you've described.
Yeah, very
you
nice
are
houses.
A top tier house sitter. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, these clients, they book their nice holidays, and I couldn't just be like, oh, by the way, I'm popping off for a race because I need to look after their animals.
Yeah.
So I had space in the calendar to do Ultra Trail Snowdonia, which I was really, really poorly before, was in hospital. And I turned up, because I was trying to prove people wrong that I could finish it. Right. Came last, but I did finish mine.
Last woman. You weren't the last finisher, I had a look.
Well, yeah, but there was a group of three of us coming from together. Fine. I think they kind of like pushed me forward. So
still does, still counts. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I had UTMB Mallorca, which I trained super hard for, and it was cancelled the night before. Yeah. So that year, I worked so hard. Really bad luck being poorly before UTS, then really bad luck, you know, Mallorca being cancelled. But it just made me work harder. I feel like I had so much to prove, and I believed I was running well, but I had nothing on paper.
Right.
So that year, a bit of a write-off. So then I came into the following year. Now, I'm just saying this because you asked about the two races. I signed up for the lottery that summer for Lakeland 100.
Right.
But I was already in the mindset I wanted to retake UTS because I knew that, yes, I finished it, but I was raising money for charity that time. So that was one of the main reasons why I didn't just do a DNF.
Right.
I tried to finish for the charity aspect. And, you know, to if you're given an opportunity to do a race and you can finish it, you should try and finish it no matter how hard it is. So, but I just knew that wasn't me giving it my best shot. So I knew I was going to be doing UTS again. But just after UTS and the recovery from the first time I did it, I saw everyone talking about Lakeland 100. And it was at the time Mark Derbyshire, he'd done course record at Snowdonia.
Yeah.
And he was doing Lakeland 100. And I was like, and he got the course record there. And I was like, he's doing both of these races in the same summer.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. I was like, do you know what? I'll put myself in for the lottery for Lakeland 100. Probably not going to get the lottery first year anyway. And I'll let the universe decide. And then, of course, I got the lottery. So I ended up with these two races, and they're 9 weeks apart.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of time.
And they're big hundreds. Like, yeah. UTS is a, what was it, like 30 hour race, something like that?
Yeah, yeah, 33 or something like that.
Yeah, and that's for a podium spot.
Yeah, yeah. So I was always, Snowdonia was my A race, and I always said, I'll see how I recover for Lakeland. And, you know, the recovery went good. I was attacked by a pig in the gap in between, which put me in hospital and wrote me off for a few weeks. But that's a whole other story.
That was a whole episode on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that was when I was dog walking.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, rogue pig got me. So that caused me, I feel a few of those weeks were actually like out because of the pig. but yeah, I ended up getting to Lakeland 100. Again, it's one of those things where it was 9 weeks. I didn't actually know how well I would perform because you don't know how the body... Yeah, I could run 40K fine, but I didn't know how 160K was going to feel.
Yeah.
But it went really well on the day and I loved it. So,
and you took, so you took third at UTS and second
at Lakeland.
That's a hell of a summer. That's amazing. Yeah, and that's only your third summer, really.
Your third summer, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'd love to find out a bit more about that UTMB Mallorca race, which you did run last year. Because actually, 2024, I went to Mallorca as a bit of a training camp, and I ended up doing one of the climbs that's on the course, and it was completely bonkers. I don't know if they've since got rid of it, but it was insanely steep. So
yeah,
what was your experience of that race? I mean, it looks like an amazing place to run.
I think I've had so much exposure therapy from Snowdonia that nothing really shocks me now, but I can understand if you are just used to regular trail running, you go to Mallorca, it is pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And I actually had some discussions with, I recce'd the course, and I had some discussions with the course, one of the race directors, because it was the first year of them running it, and I was like, mate, you need to change the cutoffs.
Right.
It is way too difficult for what you expect. The first predicted times, I just thought like it was just obscene for that level of, it's the technicality, start to finish. There is not, it's always cobble. Even on like the easy running, it's cobble, which you can never really get like a good stride on.
No.
And the climbing is pretty brutal. But they did remove, there was one section in particular, because I recce'd the old course and the new course. Fairly similar, but there was one point which was like literally climbing up rock on ladders and extreme technicality, which they did remove, which I just think would have slowed people up so much. They used that section for a sky race,
right?
But it was still, don't get me wrong, it was still like mountainous and a lot of elevation,
yeah,
and technical. Great and
you
race.
You took the win there.
No, a third.
Third, sorry.
Third,
but you've got your, so you've had a couple of podium spots at UTMB events. So you've got your place at the UTMB this year?
Yes.
And are you going to take that place?
Yeah, I'm signed up. I've got the accommodation, everything now.
And you're doing the full loop?
Yep.
How are you feeling about that challenge?
I think this year, I wasn't really expecting, you know, when you put like a five-year goal together, it's a bit early for me, so I don't really think I can give it any justice yet. I'm more going for the vibes and just to enjoy it. My A race this year will be UTS again.
Right.
Because although I did come third, I had a bad race.
Right.
I didn't fuel for 20 hours. So I'm hoping, like, third time lucky, I can actually get this race. I love it. So
it's amazing that you've gone from last to third, if you can close that off with first.
Yeah, it was a 13-hour PB in a year. So if I get another 13 hours off, I'm better than Mark.
Of course, record,
so
probably. Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, well, best of luck at that. I'll be there, so I'm hoping to...
Cool.
I've not a great mountain run. I find it very intimidating, so I don't know how you do 100 miles on that,
well,
that terrain.
Yeah, I just... I just try and not clock watch or look at distances. Just try and be in the moment when I'm in the mountains. Because if you start looking at paces and expectations like that, it's just going to hold you back. And I think the arc's kind of a similar... situation. You're not going to be able to keep to a pace. It's just the terrain changes so often, and the pattern of running, you've just got to run to your comfort level and just hold out
and just trust the endurance
side
of it.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the arc then. You do seem drawn to hard races. Is that the appeal of the arc, do you think?
Yeah, I think also it's very famous British race, and I feel like when I say I'm an ultra runner, it's one of those races people ask if I've done.
Right.
And the idea of it to start with, like when I first started running, like I said, I didn't want to do the autumn 100 because of bad weather. I was a fair weather runner. I wanted to just run in the summer and sunny days. But I am quite, I don't mind going out in bad weather. Do you know what I mean? I'm quite tough with it. As I'm a dog walker as my job, I'm used to being out in the elements all day, every day, which I think gives me an advantage.
Right.
I just see weather as weather, and you just have to deal with it differently. So that was one of the main draws, was I feel like the Arc of Attrition, you've kind of got to wear that badge if you're a British ultra runner and say that you've done it. So I just wanted to get that kind of done and dusted. But also, as I'm from the Isle of Wight, I assumed it was going to be sort of similar running, coastal. Yeah. It's totally different. Yeah. Like, totally different.
We're in Celtic country here.
Yeah, that is not the same sort of running. The last section for the people doing like the 25, similar. Even still, the climbs are a bit more aggressive and bigger, but that sort of grassy finish is similar to kind of same as like Dorset, Dwedledore kind of sort of running, which kind of replicates the Isle of Wight. But the beginning bit, oh my god, that is more like being in the mountains but on the coast. Like that is totally different.
And you've had a chance to recce then?
That's how I spent my birthday. How to treat myself in December. I came here during a massive storm.
Lovely.
Got terrible weather. Coast guards told me, because they tried to stop me when I was running, and they actually said, because I said, well, no, I'm doing a race route recce and it's in weather like this. And he was like, listen, love, the race will be cancelled if the weather is like this. And I was like, oh, okay. So it was pretty brutal for my recce, but at least I've had that exposure therapy to like the most extreme weather I think that can be, like this weekend.
Well, I mean, it's been a pretty wet week, right? Like it's pretty drizzly. Even now the trails are going to be pretty soaked. So how are you feeling about conditions? Because as you say, all of your racing experience up until now really has been in the summer. I know you had a rough storm at North Downs Way, but it's going to be claggy and boggy.
I'm hoping it means I can eat more, because I feel like when I'm too hot I lose my appetite,
right? Yeah,
and all of my races seem to have heat waves and be like really hot, and then I struggle to fuel. So I'm hoping I unlock like a new talent for like winter racing, but I don't know. We're gonna have to see how it goes. But I mean, in a way, I feel like if it was a really beautiful, calm, sunny weekend, everyone would just be like, oh, they've had it easy.
Yeah.
So I feel like I do want it to have something spicy thrown in, just to kind of, wear the pride of running this race in tough conditions.
And it's been a couple of years now where it's been pretty good conditions, I think. Like cold and dry.
Yeah.
Last year, I think seeing pictures of Tom Evans running the 50, it was like shorts and t-shirt.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Literally.
So I guess we're overdue.
And I think the couple years before that, there was like all the really fast times, which have never been seen before on that course, because it was good underfoot, which is like unheard of. This year, there's no chance of that.
Yeah.
Like, the underfoot is terrible no matter what.
Yeah.
It's just how much the wind, I think, is going to pick up. And it does look pretty tasty, like 50 miles per hour winds, maybe.
It's on the cusp, isn't it? Yeah.
So, yeah.
It'll be an interesting test, I think, of kind of UTMB. You know, obviously last year it was new UTMB event, and there was a lot of talk about it, and from generally it sounded like it went pretty well, and they did a pretty good job, but it'll be interesting to see how they sort of navigate a rougher year Just yeah, in terms definitely. Of runner safety and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I heard that it's a lot to do with the infrastructure, like the gazebos and stuff. That's what the main challenges are.
Yeah.
Since like YouTube has taken over, they've had to change the infrastructure, and then there's obviously like rules and regulations. I know last year when the storm was pending, like it hit a little bit early, thankfully, but I think they were actually worried that last year might have had to have been cancelled.
Yeah.
But luckily the weather blew in and blew out quick enough.
I think it was like a wet start and then it was fine.
Yeah.
Obviously, this being a UTMB race, it's attracted like a fair degree of international competition. We've got runners coming in from the States and Europe. Are you kind of hopeful that you and other British women, Hannah Rickman, Holly Stables, will have kind of a home advantage just knowing the UK, knowing the climate, knowing the terrain?
I mean, potentially, but there's some pretty good, I think they're Norwegians.
Yeah, I think
they're Finnish runners. So they'll be used to tough conditions. Yeah. And then Sabrina Stanley's done Leadville, Hard Rock. I think she'll be okay with tough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just one of those things. You always like at local events, don't you, like the local talent to shine through. But
yeah,
we'll see. In my Mallorca race, a local Mallorcan lady won.
Okay.
And I think, well, she was from New Zealand originally, but lives in Mallorca. And I think it's her home trails. It does make sense that she would win.
Yeah.
So you'd hope, you know, there in the men's field, there is local Cornish, isn't there, actually?
Yeah, Jamie Stevenson's running. Yeah.
But for the women, we're just, quite a few of us Brits. Would be nice, wouldn't it? But who knows?
Maybe team up, form a little blockade on the trail.
Yeah. Sanna Duffy as well. She runs good on the coastal paths. She did the Pembrokeshire FKT.
Oh, right, nice.
So
isn't it?
She'd be very used to this sort of running,
up and down.
Yeah.
Were you tempted to, one thing I'm curious about is like you seem drawn to hundreds, and as you say, you're still quite early in your career. You weren't tempted by the 50 or even the 25. What is it about the 100 distance that has captivated you, do you think?
I just love the challenge. It's like, I seem to be able to bounce back quite quickly between them. I do feel like I should utilise running in that category, because there's a lot of fast runners that can, you know, push up from a 50 to 100k, but they can't quite get to that 100 mile. So I feel like being able to run that distance and kind of quickly is sort of my niche. And I just enjoy the long, super long run, and I enjoy the going through the night and all the obstacles you face in a 100 mile race. It's like a big adventure. I feel like the other ones feel a bit shorter, and you know, they're done and dusted, and you don't even really go through a night, and it's not that same experience as like this big event where I've had it on my mind and it scares me. And
how many of those do you think you've got in you in a year, because you seem to do them quite a lot?
So this year, after ARC, I've got Tenerife Blue Trail in March, UTS May, then UTMB. So how many is that?
And Blue Trail's 100 miler?
Yeah, well, it's actually only 110k.
Right.
But it's 7,000 metres of elevation. Yeah. So it counts as 100 mile category. Yeah. But I'm using this and Blue Trail as good training for UTS in May, hopefully, providing, you know, all the training and recovery goes well.
Yeah.
I feel like the ARC, which is a bit more runnable and flatter, combined with Tenerife Blue Trail, which is a huge amount of climb up and then essentially descending all the way down.
Right.
I think those two races together will be a perfect formula for a good UTS. But you never know how the body's going to hold up. Like, I'm self-coached and I just listen to my body and what I think is capable. And if after ARC I don't feel ready to do the Blue Trail, I'll skip that one and go straight to UTS, because there's always next year.
Yeah.
So that will be 300s, then UTMB 400s, and then maybe by November another maybe five in a year.
Go into autumn 100.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could, but I don't like the fact now that with the Centurion, they're not on the UTMB
They
points.
Are again now.
Oh, are they back on
there?
Yeah,
put them back.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'll be more interested, because I really want to do the South Down Way, obviously not this year, but I still...
That'll feel very similar to your home run.
Yeah, exactly. And that looked like a race where, obviously, sunny, June time.
And actually, I think for the first 50 miles, though, you can see the Isle of Wight.
Can you? Yeah, so I really was interested in that. And then I was a bit disheartened when I saw that they'd been removed from the UTMB index, because Lakeland 100, on paper, is probably one of my best results, but it's not on ITRA and it's not on the UTMB index. So it's a bit like,
that's interesting, isn't it, that UTMB debate. It's unavoidable at the moment, but I think particularly with a race like the ARC, where it's so front
for
and
people
center.
That are trying to do it professionally and chase like a career, I think these points, sadly, they do mean a lot. So when I'm picking races, I have to try and get recognized and etc.
And well, I'd like to talk about that, actually, because a lot of runners now, you know, they come into the sport through their athleticism and their sporting background, and then they sort of build up a social media presence. Whereas I don't know the full history of your social media journey, but you have a ton of followers. Like you're doing it really well.
Yeah.
Where do you sort of sit on that, because you seem to straddle this athlete influencer binary really well, and where do you kind of sit on that? How do you feel about the world of social media as an athlete, as someone who's trying to build a career in the sport?
So I was one of those OG influencers back in the day. I wasn't an influencer. It didn't exist. I was a blogger. So right. I had a fashion blog when I was at university, hence how I built my audience up.
Yeah.
But as I grew up, I kind of moved away from the clients that I had was all fast fashion. And, you know, ethically, I kind of grew up and moved away from that. I moved my account more over to travel. But I found the social media, I did it full time for quite a long time.
Yeah.
It impacted my mental health terribly. Right. And I really, really struggled with it. And during the time when my aunt was ill, and that's where I ended up signing up for the Ultra, I just found it, that was my only source of income. And I'd have to go and take photos when I'm grieving or going through a really bad time. Then I'd have forums of people being horrible about me, and just, I couldn't handle it. I was still quite young to be exposed to something like that. And social media is totally different now. Everyone and their mum's an influencer. Like I've got people like, you know, like older people that I bump into that have started businesses, and they're on there talking to the camera, and it's crazy how normal it is. But back then I was quite an easy target. So I'd actually kind of moved away from the social media thing, had my business at home.
Mm-hmm.
That took the financial pressure off, and I only really posted every now and then occasionally. But when I first started running, I kept my running to myself for quite a long time, because it was something I'd found for me that I loved. I had Strava, that was like my diary. I posted all my pictures and stuff on Strava. And it was only after my North Down Way win when Sam from the Home Trails podcast tried to find me.
Yeah.
And he had to check if that was actually the runner.
Yeah.
Because my account just didn't look like someone who's just won the North Down Way. So at that point, I was like, right, maybe I need to start posting more about my running.
Mm.
And that's when I sort of tried to phase it over to be more, it's in line with who I am now. I don't post on social media to have a career and to follow trends and to make money. I'm posting genuinely what I'm doing, and it supports my running.
Yeah.
So it's very authentic to me now. I don't feel like I'm faking it, and I'm not trying to do something just because that's the thing to do right now.
Yeah.
So I like social media again now because I'm just posting it, and I don't care if the post flops, if it doesn't get any likes. It's just out there now, and it's what I'm doing, and it doesn't matter anymore. Whereas before, I'd post it and I'd be refreshing the likes. I'm thinking, should I take this down? Should I take this down? Right now, it's just more a diary for my running. Yeah. And I'm getting more and more new audience in that are following me from races and from podcasts and people that are interested in running. So they actually want to see what I'm doing. And I've still got audience from before that like to see this arc in my life and the change. And have followed me, sometimes other than them, followed me for like 10 years now. And they've seen how positive the running has been for me. And they're on the journey. And some of them messaged me saying they've taken up trail running. And it's just great. So, yeah. I'm the opposite. I had the following, and then I've become the runner.
It's so cool though, because you're kind of, for all the struggle you may have gone through with social media, you're kind of a step ahead of so many runners, because your content, it looks so good. You know how to make it look good. You know how to tell a story really well.
Yeah.
I totally understand how when I was looking up as well, I was a bit like, is this Charlotte Fisher? Because this is not, this doesn't feel like a trail runner's account, but it's like, you're ahead of the game, I think, in some sense.
Yeah, it's...
And it does remind, like, social media has, for all the negativity, it has improved, I think, in some ways. Do you think? Like,
yeah, definitely.
It used to be really toxic, and now I feel like there's a lot more positivity on Instagram than there used to be.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. And I try and be really transparent about my training, and, like, I enjoy when I'm out for a run. Like, for example, you can see a video that I did for the Arc of Attrition. Well, not for them. I just did it for myself.
Yeah.
I took little video clips along the recce to try and... You're in the dark for a long time in this race. So I took all loads of little clips in the daylight. It took me ages, obviously, to keep stopping and get my phone out. But just so I can... Because the course, if you just look at the places and Google the coves, it all looks the same.
Yeah.
Just so I can watch little clips of this video together and kind of work out where along the course I am. But I decided, you know what? I'll edit that together, put it out there so people that haven't had a chance to recce can look at it, and things like that I wouldn't have done otherwise, like before, like, you know. But that's creating like running content, and I enjoyed that. So it's really nice to have, because don't get me wrong, when I first started my fashion blog, I loved it, I lived for it, it's all I thought about. It's like I really wanted to progress, but I didn't fit in the fashion world. I didn't like it, and I always felt like an outsider, and I was always lost in life until I found running, and I've actually found what I'm meant to be doing and what I genuinely enjoy, and this gives me so much drive. And it's really nice to kind of go back to the social media side, because I do enjoy, I'm a creative person, creating the photos, etc. Like this morning I'm staying at the Scarlet, which they're collaborating with us, so we've been taking photos down at the sauna and the hot tubs this afternoon and stuff. And it is still fun for me to have that kind of creative outlook, but it's really nice to have some more substance. What I couldn't get my head around before was why I had these people following me just to see me in an outfit stood there. I didn't really have much to share or to give. Whereas now I feel like I have this story where my 20s were very turbulent. I'm sober now. I'm 2 years sober, and I had a bad relationship with basically being a party girl, and but it was depression. And it's how I dealt with it. And I gained a load of weight. Like I've lost 4 stone since this whole like journey as well. It's quite crazy, but a lot of people have seen all of this, so it's really nice that I can then say how much running has positively affected everything in my life. Like I've got this new lust for life, and that's new drive, even for a career.
It's also so cool that like I don't think there is much judgment in the trail running world, but if there was any judgment of people maybe assuming you're a quote-unquote runfluencer, you've got these results that are like I've come second at Lakeland, I'm a legit runner. Even if you come last at Lakeland, I've run Lakeland.
Like I've had people before, like they, I always wear lipstick at events, and now I like to keep that up. But people have made comments, and like say for example when we, Charlie and I go for like a run hike or somewhere and we get to a waterfall and I'll take a bit of like an influencer shot, all these men like rolling their eyes and be like, oh bloody influencer. But I'm like quite confident that if it came down to me racing them up the hill, I think I could beat them. So,
that's so cool. I think that's awesome.
I've lost that embarrassment for it as well. I feel like it's been such a long time doing all this sort of stuff now, and then it means that I'm quite good with media, and people to get me in a podcast because I have a lot to say. And like,
where are you foreseeing that taking you, like career? Well, I know you have a job, but like in terms of your trail running career, I guess you're trying to sort of build into the sport.
Every training block I'm getting better. I genuinely don't think I'm at my potential yet, hence why I wasn't really sure to do UTMB next year, because I don't think I'm gonna do it justice. However, it will just be part of the journey, and I think training for it I'll get better and better.
And if this weekend goes well, you'll have a spot next year.
That's very true. So obviously I would love to be signed to a pro team. I've got obviously setting my sights high. I would like the better the team, the better. I currently am supported by Hoka, so they sort all my equipment and kit, which shoes and everything, which is really helpful. To run, to have a brand like that back you professionally would be like the dream come true. But equally, I know it takes quite a while, and results, it's not something that just happens overnight, and every year the field's more competitive. So I'm just working hard, and the way I say it to people is like some people are shocked at how much time and energy I spend into running and how little return there is. But I'm like, if you're doing something you enjoy, it actually doesn't matter. I don't care if I never make a penny from it.
You say how little return, but like the experiences you've had, they're kind of a repayment in a way.
Definitely. And just the boost in like physical health, mental health.
Totally.
So much comes into it.
And is it clear as an athlete who's on maybe on that cusp or on that journey towards getting a professional contract, is it clear from the brands what they would need from you, or is it more of a you just keep showing up?
There's
not a time.
Hoka messaged me after UTMB Mallorca, and I don't think anyone expected me to be on that podium, because that was an extremely stacked international race. I was ranked 12th.
Right.
I didn't get an elite bib, so I couldn't do the elite start. I was, you know, they send the lists out. Obviously, I'm on the ARC list. There was no mention of me on anything to do with UTMB Mallorca, so I really came in under the radar. But in a way, that drove me to be like, to start with, I felt small, and I felt like I'd just come off of UTS and Lakeland 100 and was like this big shot runner, went out to Mallorca and then was a nobody again.
Right.
But then I was like, do you know what? Prove them wrong. You deserve to be here. You've done the training. And I was second till the last 10K, which is really frustrating. Dropped to third. But
do they base it, if you didn't get the elite start, do they base it on chip time or gun time? Or is it basically the same start?
I think it's the same anyway. I think it's because... I think it's more or less the same. They stagger the start based upon your UTMB index. And mine was still fairly low before Mallorca, and that boosted it up a bit. Because UTS grades you quite strictly, which is, they need to change the UTS grading.
This is a thing I wanted to ask about, because like they do talk, I've heard it mentioned that British races in general don't get graded very well because of the technicality and the conditions that don't come across in the grading.
Yeah, like UTS, they need to grade that one differently, because... Yeah, I think I got, I don't know what score I got, but I got a really low score. And considering I was still, my time's one of the best female times, you know, that it was higher than the winning time the year before, even though I was third, but it's, the scoring for that one's quite low. So I went into Mallorca with a low score, but thankfully, because there were so many elites in that race with high scores, because I placed above them, I think it automatically put mine up a bit. The scoring system to me, it doesn't make much sense. So I know that because all of mine have been 100s, that's scored stricter as well.
Right.
If you do the 50Ks and the 100Ks, you can get your score a bit higher. But I just keep doing these 100s. It's just scored like, a bit tighter.
Well, hopefully you keep plowing away. You get some progress with those brands.
Yeah.
It feels like from a social media side, I don't want to keep bringing it back to that, but you know, you're already doing a great job on there. So
that's the,
with the results to back it up, like, yeah, why that, wouldn't
that's
they?
What I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be like, look, I'm the full package. I can run, but I'll also do, and Hoka hired me for a shoot where I was the fitness, like, and then they ended up doing an interview at the same time, so I can do like the photo shoots as well. So I'm like, please guys,
you're listening, Hoka.
Funny enough, actually I spoke on a different podcast and we were talking about mentioning Hoka, and he goes, oh, well, they never listen to that. And someone from Hoka messaged me about something else and was like, oh yeah, I heard on the blah blah blah, and I messaged straight away like, they were listening. So FYI,
they're always watching.
Keep nice.
Well, hopefully you get some progress there. One thing I wanted to ask about was just where you live on the Isle of Wight. Never had a guest on from the Isle of Wight. I know it's a beautiful place. Are there races that people might not know about that you would recommend, or low-key running events, or places to run?
I'm quite new, obviously, to where I started all of this running in 2023. I've only ever done one local event. I did it at Christmas. It was called the Chilly Hilly.
This is one I've heard about.
Have you heard of it?
Is it like a fell race almost? It's like really...
There is a fell running series in September in Ventnor.
Right, maybe that's the one I'm thinking of.
I'm not sure what that's called, but I was in Mallorca training, so I missed it.
Oh, right.
But I think I like training up that hill.
Yeah.
So there's that. There is a fell racing series, which they're quite short races, and I think they have then one which is a half marathon as part of it. So there is that, but I'm not quite sure what that's called. And then there's the Chilly Hilly, which I did at Christmas time, my first local race, which basically I just saw it was the route that I was planning to train on that day, and I was like, it's good exposure therapy to get to a start line and, you know, do a bit of practice. I'd never run anything like short or fast before, so it was interesting to see actually like what speeds I can run. I didn't think I could run fast short distance, because I just do all my trainings quite like slow and long. So that was quite fun to do actually. And then we've got, there's the Needles Half Marathon, which is kind of a nice trail race. I might do that. I think that's in June. The Isle of Wight Marathon. That is a road race, but it's fairly hilly.
I
didn't get
so the kind of unavoidable in the Isle of Wight.
I didn't get the opportunity to do that because that was just before Mallorca as well. But I went out and supported people that I knew running it. That looks quite fun.
Nice.
Not like the Island Ultra Challenge is kind of people's like main event on the calendar, and people find it so crazy now. They're like, "You're doing the Island Ultra," and I'm like, "No, I can't just keep doing that one.
Yeah.
I have to kind of progress." But I support the event. I'll always be someone's pacer because I like to be involved in it. So for the last 2 years since my debut at it, I've gone back and paced people.
Nice.
1 year the winner.
Oh, nice one.
I managed to get him from second back to first. Oh, nice. So that was quite a good, a good moment.
And what's the scene? Is there much of a scene on the island? Like, are you the Isle of Wight's like girl? They're all supporting you.
Sort of. Yeah, I'd say definitely for trail running. Yeah. I am the kind of, well, mountain running in particular, because obviously we don't have a mountain, so it is a bit niche that I've just become like this mountain runner. Like, I think the tallest part on the island is like 200 meters high, so it's not actually ever very high. There is actually a great local talent called Gary Marshall. He's in his 40s and he's coming to do the 50 miler. And I really think he could be a wild card in there, top 10. Like, I would love for it. He is amazing. He just recently won like a Portsmouth 50K. And he wins like the marathon, and actually he wins any distance, 10K. He's just like phenomenal. He is like our local Mark Derbyshire.
Right.
So I encouraged him to do the arc.
Nice.
But I'm not sure, obviously, you know, Chris Jones, and like there is real...
There's
like,
some
the,
talent.
The people here is insane. So I'm like, don't worry if, you know, like... But he does, he's running with... who set the... Who did the Autumn 100 course record? Is it
Hugh Tibbs?
So he's on the England team coming up with Hugh Tibbs.
In 100K.
He's been made onto that. So that sort of does show his talent.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited, actually. I wish I could track him, but I'm going to be running.
Gary Marshall. Keep an eye out for him.
Yeah. Like, I ran with Sam Skinner, and he was like, oh, there's a lad from the Isle of Wight, really good runner. And yeah. I was like, a lad? And he met Gary. I was like, oh, the man. But yeah, I went for a run with Gary at the weekend, and he's got all his kit, and he's never done a UTMB event before, so he thinks it's like obscene that we have to carry a compass but no map and etc. Yeah. And like, I wanted to make sure he's got everything ready. I helped him find a lightweight gilet,
right? Yeah,
and everything. And I do really think that he could do an amazing job at this event.
Yeah,
because he's just one of those, you know, those talents that come along, and like Mark Derbyshire, they're just yeah. good.
Yeah,
they don't have to put half as much effort as everyone yeah. else, and they're just good at it.
Yeah, well, I'd yeah. say like yourself, two 3 years in, you're already
well. Already I put a lot of effort in.
Fair,
but yeah.
yeah, no, fair enough. Well, best of luck, Charlotte. I'm super excited to see how your race goes, because I think it's going to be, yeah, there's a few wild cards in there, but I feel like you might surprise everyone.
I literally have no clue with this one. I'm just gonna run my own race and see. I mean, Sabrina Stanley has beaten Courtney before, so
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but not in Cornwall,
that is true.
She's an altitude athlete, you know, down
that's
at sea
true.
level.
That is true. But yeah, I'm got no expectation. I'm just gonna I would love, I've put it out there and I've said it many times, I want the black buckle.
Yeah.
So I really want sub 24, but obviously the weather and the underfoot play a huge condition, like
yeah.
part into that. So I would really, really want sub 24, but we'll see.
I think you got to race,
plays out.
Race
yeah.
the race as it plays.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see.
Nice one. Well, best of luck.
Thank you.
All right, before we get on to the second part of this interview, just want to thank Trailskin for supporting the podcast. Trailskin make all-natural, high-performance skincare designed for runners, by runners. What I love about Trailskin is that they are made with all-natural ingredients. They are tested by a roster of reputable ambassadors, many of whom took part in the ARC this past weekend. I saw my friend Alex applying Trailskin liberally to his feet throughout the race, which doesn't sound very glamorous, but it certainly saved him a world of pain in the very wet, muddy conditions we saw. So if you want to get your hands on some Trailskin to look after your feet and the rest of your body, then you can head to trailskin.com. There'll be a link in the show notes. And whilst you're there, you can use the code FEETFIRST20. That is all one word, FEETFIRST20, for 20% off your next order with Trailskin over £20. And you will get £5 of store credit towards your second order. That is trailskin.com. Use the code FEETFIRST20. Your feet and a few other bits will thank you. The podcast is also sponsored by Janji. Janji make high-performance running apparel that is designed to help you move through nature and connect with the world around you on two feet. What I love about Janji is that every season is inspired by a different region of the world. They work with local artists on unique designs that tell the story of their culture, geography, or heritage. Janji and this podcast, they really share the belief that running is about more than just race results. It's about discovery and exploration of ourselves and of the world around us. So if you want to check out Janji's incredible range of apparel, they've got some new winter kits in the store. You can head to janji.com and use the code FEETFIRST whilst you're there. That's all one word. You'll get 15% off your order with Janji. That will really help support the show, keep the UK coverage going, and also help you have an awesome running wardrobe. That's janji.com. Use the code FEETFIRST. All right, here now is the second part of the interview with Charlotte. Charlotte Fisher, welcome back to Feet First. Congratulations on your second place finish, the Arc of Attrition. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
How does that feel to take a podium spot at a UTMB event?
It feels amazing. And it also makes the pre-race episode feel a bit more important now. Like, I followed through with it. So I'm like, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna cut these together in the edit so people will have the full journey with you. But if you reflect back on, you know, where you were taking those first steps at the race, how are you feeling on race day? How did the first part of the race play out? Because you were pretty much in the lead from the off, right?
Yeah, I was so nervous. I obviously knew the big names. I didn't know who was going to turn up, but then obviously I knew, like, Sabrina was there and there was other women around me that I was aware of. And I was so nervous. But I did just run my own race, and I thought there was women ahead of me, but it's really hard to know who is a woman and who isn't when everyone's got their heads up.
Yeah.
So there must just have been some feminine looking manly legs in front of me, because I didn't realise I was first until on my watch a live trail app thing popped up and it said Charlotte Fisher through the aid session, one female. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, no way. So I didn't actually know to start with that I was in the lead until the first aid station. And the signal was pretty rubbish as well, so I didn't know who was behind me. And so the first
I'd say the first marathon was quite stressful, actually, because I didn't expect to lead it. And that's a really stressful position to be in, like really stressful. But yeah, the race played out really well in the end, so I'm just absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, it went amazingly. Obviously, weather was a major player at this event. It's always a big deal at the Arc of Attrition, but this year it really, you really got a battering with a named storm, I think. Is it Irene?
Something Ingrid. Like Ingrid. Ingrid, I think. Yeah. I think I put the wrong name on my Strava to start with because I wasn't thinking straight after no sleep, and I've had to Google it and find the actual storm name.
Well, how did that affect your race strategy and what curveballs did that throw at you?
Well, it was just very difficult from the get-go, but I was kind of, I was anticipating it, wasn't I? I had said to you on the pre-race episode that I was really after that black buckle, but I had kind of accepted probably due to the conditions, I wasn't going to be able to get it. It was a bit disappointing because I had been for a year since I signed up. I was saying, I'm going to get the back buckle. Yeah. I was trying to really manifest it. And then the storm came in. And to start with, it was really bad at the start line. Then as I got along the coast, the sun even came out for a little bit. It was really windy. But then I think that was like a bit of false security because then it just became the worst weather ever. Like horrific weather. Torrential rain, strong winds, and it just makes a hard thing even harder, basically.
Yeah, I was crewing a friend, as you know, and stood at Land's End at 1 a.m. with the wind literally shaking the car. Yeah. I just can't imagine what it was like running through that night section in particular with conditions like that. Did you ever feel unsafe?
Funnily enough, actually, at Penzance, the sea was coming up. They redirected the front packs. I think the first of us, 20 of us at that point, didn't get redirected. So we were having those massive waves, which made the news, hit the sea wall, and then the water was skipping the road, going up in the air, and then coming straight down onto us. So I ended up getting into the aid station in Penzance. Everyone was like, wow, you're so clean. I was like, yeah, because I'm totally drenched of sort of like seawater. It's come over the top of my head, washed my whole body down. And then there was a crossing over, I'm guessing normally the tide doesn't even come up to the path, but the tide was right up to the path and the waves coming over. So there was security there, which was quite annoying. They held me for a bit and then were like, right, go. I went, got halfway through the walkway and a big wave came right up over me again. But apparently someone got washed out at that bit. So that bit was actually scarier, which is like, Penzance is like the town section where you don't really think it's going to be like, think more the rural cliffs are going to be out to get you. But it was actually, Penzance was some of the times where I felt the most unsafe because of the sea. And then, I mean, it was nasty through the night, don't get me wrong. But there wasn't any times where the sea was doing that close to the path like there was at Penzance. That was the scary bit. And at, they call it Mousel, don't they? I thought it was Mouse Hole, but Mousel. They completely redirected that because that must have been really dangerous there. And it was quite frustrating because obviously the GPX hadn't been updated and I'd recce'd it. So it was a different route. GPX was wrong. So my watch was saying I was off course, but the flags weren't that easy to follow. So I was a bit lost there as well and panicking where to go. So that section, yeah, was a bit stressful. And then when I got back on the trail on the bit to Land's End, it's weird, I liked it more being out on the trail because it's more simple once I was on the trail. You can't really go too wrong. It was exposed, don't get me wrong, but at least when you're on that, you just keep yourself upright. Well, I tried to. And then, yeah, continue on the route following the glowing markers in the horizon. If you can see them quite clearly when you're on a coastal path, like what direction you need to go on. I still did manage to go off course and get stuck in some brambles. My hands still are covered in the little prickles. I've been trying to get them out all day. I tried to, I obviously went off course and then tried to cut back up, which was a stupid idea, and got stuck. So, yeah.
And I understand that you banged your knee on a rock, is that right? Or you hurt your knee in some way?
I fell just before Land's End. I just lost my cool. I was running really well and then I hadn't had signal for ages, and then Charlie texted me and I saw it coming on my watch saying the Norwegian's closing the gap on you, and I think it just panicked me and I started trying to run really fast and just totally stacked it, ripped my leg in, did my knee in. It's really sore, but that injury wasn't actually, it's not actually that bad, but what happened was when I fell, my legs all cramped, so my calves and my quads, when I hit the ground, just like cramped right up. Once I got back up, they just never felt the same again. They never felt as fresh. So I feel like, yes, I hurt my knee, And it was annoying because I lost my confidence descending after that as well, because I didn't want to fall on it again. I did fall on it a couple more times, but it was more the fact that when I had this hard impact, it just caused this nasty cramp, and they just didn't feel so responsive and good after that. It was just, yeah, lost a bit of my mojo. Yeah.
Well, you managed to hold on to second place, and you did manage to get that black buckle. How was that feeling of crossing the finish line, knowing you'd achieved that goal?
That was phenomenal. It was the best feeling ever. Like, if you'd have asked me on the episode the day before, would you take third place and the black buckle, I'd be like, yeah. Like, it meant more to me to get that black buckle than what place I was going to be on the podium. Sub-24 was, like, the biggest goal of mine for that event, and I didn't know, obviously, where that would place me, but that's what I really wanted. So to get that, I really didn't think it was possible. After the night section, I'd got cold, and this issue with my breathing had come on. Well, so short of breath. I think it was a combination of the salt, the cold, and the sand and everything. Here, I'm quite breathless now still, but I just was really struggling to breathe, and I think I had 6 hours to a marathon, which seems like a lot of time, but that marathon, when you're already that tired, is still quite challenging to do in 6 hours, or five and a half, whatever I had. And I'd kind of accepted it probably wasn't likely. And then I saw a message come in from my watch when I was going through the sand dune saying, sub-24 is still on if you carry on moving at that speed. But at that point, my breath was still just so short. And I was like, right, focus on your breathing. Just try and get there. And it was only when I got to the last aid station, I was 7K from the end, I had an hour and a half. And then again, an hour and a half to do 7K seems like a lot. But if you've done that last 7K, there's a massive climb out of the town, and then there's two massive kind of gully climbs, and then you go into the final town, and then you've still got the big climb. So even then, I still didn't know if it was going to be possible. And it was only when I was doing the final stretch, and I saw her 10 minutes ago, I was like, right, time to reapply the lippy. You've done it. Get ready for the motors. And I made it by, I think it was 11 minutes or 10 minutes or something. So I just, that for me just made the event. I was so pleased because I just had accepted from the get-go, really, that was out of reach. I didn't think I was going to get sub-24. I was so pleased with it.
Incredible. And you join a very small group of women who've achieved that, and to do it in arguably one of the toughest, I think people are saying it's probably the second toughest conditions ever. I dread to think what the most tough looked like. That's a huge achievement. You should be so proud of that.
Yeah, so pleased. Thank you. Fergie was at the finish line, the race director, and he was saying that just myself and the Norwegian lady that won, we're the only two women who've done it in bad weather in sub-24. Other years was obviously Noor last year. She did it. The year before was Sabrina Virgie, and then the year before that there was Emma Stewart, which, I mean, she could do it in any weather. If there's an apocalypse going on, she would still get the buckle. So I think she's safe no matter what. And then there was also that year Robin Cassidy. So that is a really small group of women. And to be like with those names, I'm so buzzing, because they, like, Noor went on to do Tour de Juan, didn't she? She just, and that massive FKT. So she's an amazing runner. And then those other names are like the best Brits. So I'm just, can't believe it.
Yeah, well, you're in that group now. I mean, we talked a bit on the pre-race pod about, you know, you wanting to make sure you're wearing lipstick and being yourself at these races, but still, like, you know, putting down these incredible performances. You must feel, if you didn't already, you must feel like you've made your mark here. You've cemented your reputation in the sport.
Yeah, this definitely feels, because my last event was obviously in Mallorca, so you don't get the same kind of buzz as here. And what I loved about this one was there were so many people supporting me the whole time, and I've had like the most amazing response on social media. Such lovely messages. People were going out their way to be so kind. And not only that, I went out on course for the 25 miler, the marathon on the Sunday, and the amount of people that recognised me and congratulated me, and like the runners, and it was just so nice. It was such a positive day. Like, even my partner Charlie was buzzing off of the energy because it was just such a nice, happy response. And the aid station people were so friendly, and I was wearing a regular outfit. I didn't think anyone was going to realise it was me, the runner from the day before, but people still knew it was me. It was just so nice.
That's That's awesome. Well, you breezed past me at the first crew point, didn't even clock me. You were so
I didn't even know it was you till I saw that. Yeah, the video. I'm so sorry.
You were in the zone. No, totally fine. One thing we didn't talk about in the pre-race pod was a bit of a worry you had in the week leading up to the race. Your mum had some health issues. I wondered if you could just reflect upon how the race panned out. I know you thought at one point you might not even start, so it must feel extra special now to have the result that you've had.
Yeah, so it felt like, so last so the weekend before the race, the Saturday, I couldn't get hold of my mum all day, which is quite weird because I always check in with her. And I got a phone call at 8 p.m. and you just know something's wrong. And I said to Charlie, that's bad news. And my mum called me. I was like, you all right, mum? And she was crying. She was like, no, I've had a bleed on the brain, which obviously for me, my heart sank because that sounds extremely serious.
Yeah.
She was like, I've got no signal in the hospital, but I've got to go back in. I just want to let you know you're not allowed up here right now. Speak to a partner kind of thing. But I wasn't having any of that. I went straight to the hospital and found her. And I was like, stayed with her. And yeah, so unfortunately she'd woken up and had gone numb down her hand, one side and down her face. It's a funny story actually, because my mum once had a go at me because I never mentioned her in podcasts. So I'm like, mum, you didn't have to go this far to get mentioned, all right?
this is
a bit extreme. Yeah, bleed on the brain. But so luckily, well, I say luckily, it's still not that lucky, is it, a bleed on the brain? But it was on the outside of the brain, not the inside. But the problem was, is on the scans, they found an abnormality on the brain, which meant that the Isle of Wight Hospital, because I'm on the Isle of Wight, the scans weren't advanced enough on the stroke unit here to work out what it was, etc. So she had to go over to Southampton. So that was a stress, not being even able to visit her those days. And I just feel like I couldn't get into race mode when my mum might have a mass on her brain. But thankfully, it all came back as something hereditary that she's likely had her whole life. And the bleed was caused by a high blood pressure. And the mass would always have been there rather than something that is sinister. So she was home Thursday when I was coming to Cornwall. So it's just a big relief to kind of know she was home and okay. I was like, mum, don't stay up all night checking my race because you're meant to rest. Like, you just had an extreme like injury on your brain. But she, when I said to her on the Monday, like, I'm not going to go to Cornwall, she was like, yes, you bloody well are. I was like, well, I can't. What's this is all going on? This is horrific. And the stress, like, something like that takes a huge toll on your body as well. I just felt awful, but it does also put things in perspective, and it did take away a lot of my pre-race anxiety because I was then focused on her a lot. So It kind of calmed me down in a way because I kind of accepted I probably wouldn't be racing. So it took away like a lot of the aspect of that for a little bit. And then, yeah, when she was transferred back to the island and was due to come out, we headed to Cornwall on the Wednesday.
Amazing. Well, thank God she urged you to race because the result is one of truly a historic time and a historic performance. So what's your mum's name? Sorry.
Alison.
Well, shout out to Alison, and I hope she's making a good recovery. One other person I wanted to talk about before we finish is your friend Gary Marshall, who you shouted out as one to watch in the 50 miler. And you were right. I mean,
I called
seventh
it.
Place in his first UTMB event. Is it? It's not his first ultra necessarily, is it? But
no, he did the Island Ultra Challenge. Yeah, but right. It's his first UTMB event.
Amazing.
Well, he killed it, didn't he? And do you know what?
Yeah, go on.
He would have come fifth, but he got lost in St. Ives. He missed the markers.
Ah.
So he actually lost two spaces, but he would have been fifth.
Well, a stunning time. And at one point, I don't know if it was the tracker or him, but he was showing his, like, it's about 10K ahead of Chris Jones. And I thought, this guy's going out at, like, kamikaze pace. But I think that must have been a mistake.
I think that must have been a glitch because in our running group, I saw a few of those screenshots after the race. And Charlie texted me saying, Gary Marshall's winning. And I was thinking, he's good, but I'm not. Like, Chris Jones was a few minutes behind Jim Walmsley. So I was like, yeah. Is Gary the best in the world, or like,
maybe
like,
he's just
good, but
he's just never left the Isle of Wight. We've never found out that he's actually.
I know, it was so awesome. We picked him up and took him to the awards ceremony because he won. Obviously, I think I said in the pod he would get age category winner and top 10. And
yeah, first man in the 45 plus category.
Yeah, and so we took a photo because I obviously won my age group, so we took a photo for our running. It's not a club, it's like a group that we go to, like a social kind of running group and trail running. And yeah, they were so supportive through the whole event. Like, like tracking me and then tracking Gary. It's just so nice. So yeah, we just took a few photos and I took Gary's photos like up on the stage and introduced him to, it's Hugh Tibbs, isn't it, who did the,
yeah,
oh, he's getting, because there's too many male names which are a bit similar in those events, so I get them a bit confused.
Different.
Yeah, that's it. But they're both really good, so I didn't to make sure I say the right one. So yeah, I introduced him to Hugh Tibbs and said, oh, Gary is going to be on your England team. So funny, because he's like well tall and Gary is really tiny, so... But it was really nice and just, yeah, such a wholesome awards evening, actually. Everyone there was just so nice. So nice.
Yeah, it was a lovely atmosphere, the whole event, actually. It was my first time attending a UTMB event and I was really, really impressed with just how warm and communal it felt. So really enjoyed my time.
Definitely. Like Charlie and I said today, we're a little bit depressed coming back because we were in like such a nice race bubble, despite it being like horrific weather.
Yeah.
During the actual event, it was just still, everyone was so nice and friendly. And then obviously we had that really nice on the Sunday where it was sunny and we went out to support the other race and everyone was still like being nice to me and we came away from the race bubble and it's a bit like, oh, we're back to reality. But it was such a lovely event, wasn't it?
It was great, yeah. I mean, I did not envy you in those storms, but to crew it was a real privilege. Well, Charlotte, congratulations again. I'm super stoked for you and I really genuinely just cannot wait to see what this year and the next few years have in store for you. I know you're still on the up and you're still approaching your prime, but yeah, massive kudos.
Oh, thank you so much. The race director from Tenerife Blue Trail emailed me just now, actually, because he also was a race director for Mallorca. He emailed me when I was training in Tenerife a few weeks ago and said good luck in Arc of Attrition. Anyway, he's just emailed now saying I was tracking you the whole way, now you get ready for Tenerife. So yeah not nice. Long till that, actually.
When is Tenerife?
March something. It's not long. I've got to get basically back to training pretty soon.
I'm actually going to Tenerife in the beginning of March. Oh, it's just a few weeks afterwards. 19th to the 20th.
The 20th, yeah.
20th. Nice. Oh, maybe I'll try and check out some of the course. That'd be cool.
It's so good. Honestly, you have to get a permit now to go up TD, so the actual volcano. I couldn't go up in January anyway because there was too much ice and snow up there. You wouldn't want to either. Yeah. It was so cold. Like, it's quite dangerous up there when it's like that. But
no, I think I'll stick to some of the forests and the jungles. But what a place to go. That's going to be amazing.
It's amazing. The route on the... by this... Is it Santa de Cruz side? Oh, really lovely forest running. And just, yeah, love the trails there.
Nice. And a good place to have a holiday as well. Perfect.
Yeah, definitely.
Charlotte Fisher, thanks so much.
Thank you.